Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. I said that kind of fast, didn't I? Let me slow down. Hello and welcome to Building the... Too slow?
You're terrible at this.
Hello and welcome to Building... Today is Monday... Blah, blah, blah. Monday, March 31st. That's it. I'm Rob. That's Jason.
96.
96 episodes. This is the 96th one.
That's what I
kind of feel like I don't mind being a little silly and kind of not going through the motions every time.
I've noticed that for the last few episodes.
Yeah, couple of last things I did were a little funky, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't say anything about that, so I figured I was okay.
Nobody complained.
No, so.
And I mean, I'm sure that our listeners would be like, guys, could you cut that out?
Yeah, if they cared. Though we did get one gentleman say, hey, you need to figure out your volume stuff a little bit better.
Well, and he's right.
And
we appreciate that. The end song has always been
Is kind of loud, yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things that I've always known, but nobody ever called me out on it. And right. It was just, you know.
And what the person's comment was that they're hearing impaired, so they listen to the show kind of loud.
Yeah.
And then when that player's in at the end, it's pretty loud.
So. Blows out their car speakers.
Yeah, which is fair. So,
yeah. So I'll work on that.
Cool.
Hopefully this episode will be a new beginning.
But be ready just in case. If you're listening to this episode and you're concerned about that,
just in
be
case
ready.
I forgot all about it.
Yeah. And if this episode does not get better, please send us another email and I will chastise Rob for it on the air.
On the air.
So we really appreciate that feedback, though.
That's kind of feedback we don't usually get that is important for us to hear.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, cool. How's it going, man? How you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I've been doing a lot of stuff. I've been, we'll talk about this more in the next episode, but I finished shipping everything for Water Balloon Washout.
Water Balloon Washout. So. Yes. It's done. Yeah. This is like the first episode we recorded since it was done.
Yeah. We've got it. It's done. So, and I guess... If you don't follow us on Twitter, maybe you don't know. I got the game.
Yeah.
Rob and I went and picked it up. And then we I took it back and did a survey, which I probably should have done. I was really nervous about the survey because I was like, oh, I should have sent the survey like 2 weeks ago and I forgot. And like 80% of backers did respond within 2 days.
That's great.
You guys are awesome.
Now, if we time this correctly here, because we're recording this now, I think last Wednesday, assuming my timing is right, we posted a bonus episode. No, this coming Wednesday. Yes,
a bonus episode of us going to get it.
Yeah, we recorded some audio in the car on the way there and on the way back talking about it. So yeah, so that'll be coming up this Wednesday. We'll be hosting that. So I don't really know if that's gonna be even moderately entertaining, but it's just kind of us talking out our anticipation and our reaction to the game.
Yeah. So we were super happy with how it looks, and the people that have seen it so far have been super happy with how it looks. I was able to hand deliver some. To people around Kalamazoo who backed it. But all the mailers have went out, even the international ones. So pretty excited. Most of you hearing this now probably already have it in your hands.
Hopefully.
You know, in a couple weeks, if you don't have it, let me know. I'm sure you will because, you know, you should do that because you paid for it. So let me know if you didn't get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we've already had some sales from some other people buying it. So.
Well, I don't want to take credit for your game. You have had some sales. Your game, sir.
You always say the royal we.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Dealing with stuff. It sounds like you're more important.
But you're also going to try and set up a storefront on the homepage, right?
Yep, and we're going to sell some more products.
Right.
We're thinking we can do a link through to some other stuff.
Yeah, we can get a link through to Rumplebum on GameCrafter through that.
Yeah, we'll get those at least two things up there, and then we'll... As we have more stuff to sell, we'll throw it out there. So if you're like, gosh, there's something I really want, like maybe signed posters. I'm sure that's a big thing.
I don't know.
Our logo on like a...
Do we have
I'm
posters?
I'm thinking like a 42 by 175.
75,
like 100. Banner style, like banner, our banner.
A banner.
Like this huge banner.
Poster with our signatures on it.
Exactly.
Okay. Is that for sale? We have that ready to go?
I would sell them what we have for $100.
$100?
Because it costs us like 40.
So if you want a Building the Game banner with us signing it, Jason will try and make that happen.
No, let's not do that.
Okay.
If there's any products you're dying to have for Building the Game, other than more games, because we're working on that.
Do you want t-shirts?
What? We have t-shirts.
We have t-shirts, but do we want to sell t-shirts?
Super cost effective to sell.
No, it's not a moneymaker t-shirts.
It's not even that it's a moneymaker. It's not something people would want to pay $20 for.
Plus shipping. Yeah. You don't want t-shirts from us.
But if you want one, let us know and we'll tell you how to get one, but you don't.
I think we did through Cafe Press, right?
I think we did too, yeah.
Because we were super lazy and in a hurry.
It was the easiest way. Mm-hmm. But hey, they're holding up. They're good quality.
Yeah, they're doing fine. Yeah, I wore my t-shirt last weekend weekend before last, based on the posting here, when I went to Proto Spiel. I went to Proto Spiel Milwaukee.
You did.
And I went there with Mr. Jason Katarski and Mr. Jeff Large.
Yep.
Jeff Large of Happy Mitten and Jason Katarski of so
every
many
game you've ever played.
Awesome things, yeah. It's just a day trip. We went on that Saturday. I guess it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event. And we went on the Saturday. It's about a 4-hour drive for each of us. A little longer for Jason because he's from Flint. But Jeff's in Grand Rapids and I'm here in Kalamazoo. And so for the two of us, it's about an hour to where we met in Bent Harbor and then about a little over 3 hours all the way to Milwaukee. And they were excellent traveling companions, I must say. I had a good time talking with those guys and getting to know them a little better. That was a lot of fun. Proto Spiel, though, Milwaukee, and I haven't been to the one in Ann Arbor yet, but this one was not really kind of what I expected it to be. Now, I'll say, I recorded some stuff in the car on the way there and on the way back, and Jeff and I both recorded some things together while we were in the car there and on the way back. I've kind of decided not to post what I recorded, because I didn't record anything while we were at the event,
mm-hmm.
and what I recorded on the way there and on the way back, I kind of feel like there's not really a whole lot of interest in any of that.
And if you want to hear basically what you guys talked about on the way there,
just listen to Heavy Men.
Well, or 20 Minutes of Filler.
Yeah, right.
Jason mm-hmm. did a whole 20-minute episode of you and Jeff and him talking about games and stuff in general.
Right, yeah.
Mostly filler games and that sort of thing, but that was a good episode. I just listened to it this week.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun to do. So listen to Heavy Men. You can hear a lot of what we talked about with those guys in the car. So Proto Spiel is not really what I expected. Everything I've heard about these sorts of events is what I've heard about Unpub, basically. I mean, my impression had always been that Proto Spiel and Unpub were kind of on par as the same thing.
Right.
And my understanding, I understand now that that is not the case.
Right.
But we got there and it was kind of a small room. It was a little cramped. There were a lot of people kind of packed into a small area. The reception desk wasn't, well, nobody was even sitting at it when I went in there. There was no one there to receive me at the reception desk. I just kind of got the impression that it was not super well organized. Which I really don't mean to be critical of anybody who was attending, but I feel like the organizers of that maybe could have done a little bit better job of presenting the situation. Maybe it was better on Friday. Maybe they were just kind of focused on the people there who were there for all 3 days.
Right, because maybe people mostly go for all 3 days.
I've
never been either. I plan to go to the one in Ann Arbor and check it out. But
yeah, so as the day went on, I kind of started to realize that I was doing it wrong. Going to Proto Spiel for one day was really a bad idea. It was not the right way to do that event. Now, Unpub, every designer there had their own table, and you could go to some other designer's table and play his or her game, and people from off the street could come in and come to play your game, you know? But if you're going to go to that designer's table, you're going to play that designer's game. But at Proto Spiel, you just have 4 or 6 or 8 guys sitting around the table, and every single one of those guys is a designer.
And they all paid to show their games.
And they all paid to get there and play their games. And so when you sit down at a table, you kind of don't know whose turn it is to play the game next. And you know, you get down, you're excited, and you want to play your game and get feedback on your game.
But so does everybody.
But so does everybody there. And so as the day kind of went on, I kind of got the feeling like whenever I was playing a game, and I admit that I'm guilty of feeling this way too, and I realized that I was feeling this way about halfway through the day, and I really felt like a jerk for it. But while I was sitting there playing someone else's game, I really just felt like I was waiting for my turn.
Right.
Like, I wasn't even really focused on the other guy's game. I was just kind of waiting for my turn to get my game to the table and get some feedback. And I felt really bad when I had that realization, but that kind of seemed to be how most of the guys in the room were acting, and kind of just the whole feeling in the air about that.
Right. Well, and I could see, like, because I know that I've heard others talk about how much they love going to Proto Spiel. My assumption with that is a couple things. One, they have friends that go there, so they have people they're going to meet. And then there's not that awkward, like, all right, whose turn is it? Because you're like, you know, if it was you and me and Katarski, everybody gets a turn. There's no pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when it's you and Katarski and then some people you don't know,
yeah,
you don't know if everybody's going to get a turn.
And you don't want to be a jerk and say, my game is the one we're going to play next. And everybody's participating. Right. You finish a game, and then you just kind of pause, and you wait for somebody else to say, okay, well, you know, let's try mine next. And you don't want to be the jerk that says, oh, let's play my game, and then when your game's done, you get up and walk away. Because everybody was nice enough to spend their time with you, and so you want to extend the same courtesy to them.
Right.
And I kind of felt like, well, I only got to play Innkeepers once for the whole day.
Right.
I played Innkeepers one time. I played Rocket Wreckers three times, twice with Jason and once with another gentleman that I met. His name escapes me now. I apologize for that. But I only got to play Innkeepers once, and I was really excited about getting a lot of playtesting done.
And to be clear, you didn't play Rocket Wreckers because you were like, let's play Rocket Wreckers. It's because you needed a quick filler game.
Right.
Because you had a few minutes before the next person game was starting. Right. So.
Yeah, so... So that was kind of, I brought Rocket Wreckers just because Katarski was curious to see it.
Right.
And that wasn't even going to be my focus, but I ended up playing it three times, and Innkeepers, which is I really wanted to really focus
right.
on, got to the table one time.
Right. And I think that, you know, in a situation like that, I would do very poorly too, because, you know, like, I'm not the guy who can sit at a table with a bunch of people and everybody has a game and just be like, hey, you guys want to play my game? Because I feel yeah. like, why would they want to play my game? They'd rather play somebody else's, mm-hmm. you know?
We're all here for the same thing, so, you know, you don't want to be the jerk.
Right.
You don't want to be a jerk.
And that's what's great about the setup of Unpub, in my opinion,
yeah.
is that mm-hmm. You had designers that were bummed because they didn't get to play other people's games,
mm-hmm.
because you were getting to play your game all day.
Yeah.
So, like, you would try and take a break to go check out somebody else's game, you know?
Right.
And that's what we, like, when Katarski and myself and Andy would... be sitting there, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, nobody's playing our games right now. Hey, you want to quick do a game of this so we can test this together? Oh, that sounds like fun. Let's do that. Mm-hmm. You know, because there was no pressure because your stuff was getting tested.
Right.
But yeah, I wouldn't do well either. Now, some designers probably do great with that. And I think the one of the cool things, so there's a good thing and a bad thing about feedback in these different scenarios, right? Because at Unpub, you're going to get a lot of feedback and it might all be good, but you're also going to get feedback from players who maybe aren't super interested in giving feedback.
True, yeah, yeah.
And maybe they're not big game players. Maybe they just came for the heck of it because yeah. they heard about it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it means you might not get the type of feedback you're looking for. When you're playing with designers, you can say to a designer, this is what I need to know about this game, and they're going to get it.
Yeah.
So you're going to get that designer feedback. The catch is if they're all just really want to play their game too, which is fair because mm-hmm. they paid to go show their game.
Yeah.
It just makes it hard. It's just kind of stressful for everybody.
I don't want to say, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that I got bad feedback, because that absolutely not.
No, you probably got good feedback.
I got excellent feedback. Everybody who played the game was very positive about it and very encouraging about it and gave me excellent comments.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So
they're designers.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm complaining about the feedback that I got, because it was spectacular. And that was very, very helpful. What I'm frustrated by was that I had hoped to get more out of the day. And that's when I kind of said at the beginning of this, I think I was doing it wrong. Like, I think going to Protospiel for one day was a bad move.
Right.
Because so I was
a lot of pressure to get your game out.
Exactly.
There.
Right. I had put too much pressure, too much expectation on the day to get done what I wanted to get done. Now, if I had been there for the full 3 days, I would not have felt that way at all. Because I would have had 3 days to get my game played. I wouldn't have gotten up at, you know, 3 a.m. To meet some guys to you know, get dressed and drive to the place where I'm going to meet the guys. And I think about, you know, I wouldn't have had to think about leaving and driving 4 hours to get home and not get home till 2:30 in the morning,
right.
you know?
And if you'd played your game once a day, every day,
would have been three playtests,
right. And that would have been plenty.
Plus, I would have been instead of leaving to drive home at, you know, 8 o'clock, I would have gone out to a restaurant and then come back to the hotel and hung out with all these same people later into the night,
right.
had more time to play my game. So, you know, so I did it wrong. I didn't go to Protospiel in the way that I should have.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I had a poor experience there.
Right.
Another thing that frustrated me was that the website implied that there would be a lot of publishers there. And as far as I can tell, there was not a single publisher there. Maybe I just don't know faces and names, but that was a disappointment as well.
Right. And I think, obviously, knowing... Did people have name tags?
People had name tags, yeah.
Did it say what they were?
You had the option to write on there what you were.
Okay. Because the ones for Unpub, I mean, it said
yeah.
designer, publisher,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
Because... then everybody knows.
Yeah.
And I get it. If you're a publisher of those things, you probably get harassed a lot. But also, you're a publisher, and that's probably what you want, is to get, you know, you want to talk to people. I mean, that's why you're at...
It's kind of when you quite go to those things to try and find a new product, I would imagine. Yeah. But that said, I saw some good people. I saw Dusty. Dusty helped me playtest Rocket Records last year, Gen Con.
Oh, nice.
And
did he get to try it again?
No, we didn't try it again, and we didn't get to play anything, but I could see him again. He had backed Rocket Records, so I gave him a copy of that. I saw Neil, a good buddy, Neil Roberts, again. I met Dan Masick, who's a listener, and he was a good dude. I met a gentleman, Andy Voigt. Andy, Andrew, I'm sorry if I don't know what you go by. And we played his game, which was a dodgeball game,
nice.
It was a 6-player dodgeball competition card game. Kind of a strange structure to it, but once we got into it, it was really fun. I really enjoyed that very much.
Nice.
I don't remember the names of everybody I met, but it was a good time. Meeting those people was fun.
Right. That's always the best part about those things, is getting to meet the other people. I mean,
right.
Really.
Right. But, yeah, so anyway, I don't want to complain too much about it, but, I mean, do you think those are fair statements?
Because listening to the whole story, listening to you talk about the good things that happened too, I mean, I think that when you go to an event like that, it's all about your expectations, right? You have to have the right expectations about what you're going to expect. And since you'd never been to a Protospiel, and I'd been to an Unpub, the biggest Unpub that they have, and I explained to you how it works.
I was hoping for that.
Right. Yeah. And that's not how it's set up there. Right. And there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you know that going in. And the only reason you didn't know that is because you'd never been, and you had misinformation from me about another event, you know? So I'm interested to see what the one in Ann Arbor is like.
Yeah. Well, that'll be different because I'm not going to be able to go this year, but it'll be different for you because you're going to be going for all 3 days, right?
Hopefully. We'll see. So, I mean, I hope so. It's not that far away. So, I could drive back and forth.
Right.
I'm definitely going to go for the Saturday. And for me, for Protospiel, like, especially Protospiel in Arbor, I'm going to know a ton of people there. So, even if I don't get to play much, I mean, I'm assuming that I'll see, like, Ben Pinchback, Matt Riddle, Andy Lennox, Jason Katarski. I'm sure Jeff and maybe more, maybe Kyle and Leandra too will be there from Happy Minton. All sorts of people that we know will be there. So that, and Jeremiah Lee will probably be there. So that makes a big difference, you know, too.
Yeah, it sure does.
Again, because then my goal of going is to hang out with friends and to maybe play test some games, you know. But I mean, that doesn't make me as, you know, like when I went to Unpub, my first concern was like, I gotta play these games.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, that's not a problem. I'm playing tons of these games. Yeah. Like, I really want to play other people's games, too. But if I had the pressure of one day and possibly, you know, in my head, I'm thinking I may have driven 9 hours today to not play my game, I would be really, really nervous about that.
Yeah. And I only got to play Innkeeper's Tour. It was the last game that I played in the day. Second to last game I played in the day.
So you were probably nerve-wracking.
I was kind of crapping bricks there as it got later in the day. And it was the kind of thing where, you know, I'm sitting there next to Katarski and we're playing something. And he's like, dude, can you believe what time it is? And I look at my clock or my phone and it's 5:00. Last time I looked at my phone, it was 1:30.
Wow.
And I'm like, I got to play my game. Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah.
So I guess my advice to any of our listeners out there, if you've never been to one of these events, is trying to get a more realistic idea of what the event is before you go.
Right.
Because that's what frustrated me, is that I had an unrealistic expectation of what the event was going to be. So I didn't get out of it what I hoped to get out of it. So,
well, I didn't even think it was unrealistic. It was just misinformed. I mean,
Misinformed maybe. Yeah. So talk to people, try and gain before, if you're not sure about what you're going to get out of an event, don't stay home because you need to go and do things, but try and talk to people who have been before to understand better what the deal is, what you're going to experience so that your expectations are correct. You know?
Well, yeah, because realistic. You want to go in with realistic expectations because you want to know what you're getting into and you want to know if it's worth your trip. I mean, it depends on what you need for your game. You know what I mean? If your goal is, I need to go get 10 playtests of this done, and you don't think that's going to happen, you know, you want to know if that's not going to happen. So you can either decide not to go and do something else where you can maybe get those tests done, or temper your expectations and go and expect only to get one or two play tests done. I mean, certainly if you'd been aggressive, I'm sure you could have gotten 3 plays of it in.
Yeah.
But then you would have been jipping other people.
Exactly.
And you don't want to do that.
I don't want to be fair to people, right?
So, of course.
I also played Ether Magic again.
Oh, did they have that there?
Yeah, they brought it again. So, you know, that's super fun. I played Gitarski's Camp Khaki game, which is great. That was he was previously calling it Ohalo.
Yeah. So, and that's the version I played, which was super fun.
Okay, yeah, so that's great. That's excellent. What else did I play? I played, and I don't remember his name, the designer's name, but the guy who did Dig Down Dwarf, which it won the GameCrafter Microgame Challenge, the same one that I entered Rumpelbum in.
Cool.
So his was the winner, and I guess he's getting ready to start a Kickstarter on it. But that was fun. It was a real simple, you roll your dice, and based on the set that you get, you know, a straight or two of a kind or three of a kind or whatever, you take a certain type of gem from the center. Then you either keep the gem for points or you destroy it to use the special power. Pretty, you know, kind of fun, real simple sort of thing there. So that was pretty cool. Another gentleman had a 4X game about space exploration that I don't remember his name or the name of his game, and I'm sorry about that.
You're so good with names.
I'm so terrible with names, actually. And that was interesting. I don't play a lot of 4X games, but that one had some potential. It was neat because the way he had it structured is you had your spaceships and you would roll a D4 to determine what type of spaceship you had. So the number that was sticking up is normally on a D4 the number that you use.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, that's the number that's dead. And then the other three numbers correspond with abilities on a card.
Oh.
And so, based on which number is pointing which direction means you're going to take whatever given action. If it's pointing towards the planet, you're going to, you know, colonize the planet. If another number is pointing at an enemy, you can use that to destroy a ship. It was pretty clever.
That is.
Yeah.
What an interesting use of a die.
Yeah, it was pretty smart. And I feel like there's something else that I played, but I did have a good time playing those games. Yeah.
Good. So good.
Anyway, maybe if I can talk briefly about Innkeepers, about the feedback I got from that. I don't mean to hog everything here, but
no, that's okay.
Okay. I mean, it's your turn to pitch. So you're going to talk the rest of the time.
It's true.
Basically the feedback that I got from Innkeepers, they didn't like one of the bad guy characters, one of the penalty cards. And so I need to kind of tone down that power a little bit.
And it was overpowered.
It was overpowered. Right. But,
same one I complained about.
Yeah. 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 By and large, the clearest, information that I got was that mechanically people were very positive about it, and they felt like it was really, it worked very, very well. And that my number one problem right now is clarity, is easily conveying, the restrictions and the requirements of tile placement, right, and of how different characters interact with each other.
And that's something we talked about before. So that's great validation on that.
It absolutely is.
Game is solid. It's confusing.
Right. Yeah. And not to jump the gun on Twitter questions, but Dan Masick tweeted at me and said, hey, you know, really want to know what's next for Innkeepers. And I haven't gotten back to it since I've been back. I've been busy with work. But that's the next step for Innkeepers, is to work on iconography.
Right.
And make a nice, because the prototype I have right now is very, very bare bones, basically working on mechanics to make sure all that stuff functioned. But the next step is to make a little bit prettier looking that can incorporate some iconography to help convey the way those things work together better.
So at this point, are you thinking that's going to be your big Gen Con game this year?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely.
I figured, but
yeah.
Way to be ahead of the game, because I right now have no clue. I have a bunch of options. I have more options than you do.
Yeah.
But based on the prototypes I have, but I don't have any good, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I've got choices, but none of them feel like an Innkeepers to me. Like, none of them are, like, a standout. Like, I could look at, the games you had and be like, dude, Innkeepers is the game you want to take because it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? So. I don't feel like I have one of those right now. So,
yeah, I'm very, very happy with where it's at right now. So, yeah. So, anyway, that's enough about that. Protospiel, I would go again, but only if I could go for all 3 days.
Right.
And that's the only situation where I would go
makes
back.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
I would be willing to risk just going on a Saturday if it was the Ann Arbor one, because then it only took 2 hours instead of like 4,000.
Right. So. Yeah. It's much, much closer to home. So anyway, moving on. I guess that was our feature of the week.
Yeah. so we talked about stuff.
Yeah. Now you need to pitch a game.
I do. I'm going to re-pitch a game. A game I pitched a long time ago. I don't remember what episode, but... It was a long time ago, and it was originally a deck building game.
Go on.
my noir murder mystery game.
Yeah.
Called In a Hail of Bullets.
Right. I still love that name.
I do too. And that's what I keep thinking keeps drawing me back to the game. So the idea, I'm going to kind of give you the original pitch real quick. The idea was it was a deck building game. There is a board, and you're a private eye with a small deck of cards that allow you to do different things. Basically, the elevator pitch for the game was you're trying to solve a crime while moving around this city, and people keep trying to kill you.
Yeah.
So, hence, In a Hail of Bullets. Very noir. Everybody was a different detective. You could get, like, a secretary and a dame and all these different things. And the problem was that the more powerful you got, the deck would get bigger. That it kind of made solving the crime kind of lame. Because you were basically just trying to collect enough evidence to be like, oh, I've got all these cubes of evidence and, aha, I solved the crime. And it just didn't feel really organic to me. And also, because your deck kept growing, it kept making it harder to get the things done you needed to get done because too many dang cards. So I kind of put it aside because I felt like it wasn't going to work. And it really bummed me out because the idea of a noir deck building game that's actually a board game as well sounded so attractive to me. And I love the name. So put it aside, worked on other stuff. And then maybe a month or two ago now, we were on Something from Nothing talking with the guys. And TC Petty was talking about some game. I don't for the life of me remember what game it was, but he used the term deck culling.
And I was Yeah.
And I was like, deck culling? Hey, that's when you like, I've never played a game with that in it. And I know there are some, but I don't know what they are because I don't remember the game you talked about. And that doesn't seem to be a mechanic on Board Game Geek.
Okay.
That's not the way I'm doing it. And as we know, Board Game Geek can be incredibly hard to search and you don't know exactly what you're looking for. So I even tried to Google Board Game Geek, deck culling, nothing came up. So yeah, but when he said that, it clicked. What if everyone had an identical deck of cards? And I'll get into what those cards are in a minute. But the idea is you need to get down to solve the crime. So as you're, and there's one crime, like everyone's trying to solve the same crime, like Clue style. And the crime has five components. It has a suspect, a victim, a crime, an actual crime, a location, and a dame. Because those are kind of the five things you would see in a noir film, right?
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. You don't disagree with my noir film logic?
No. Okay. Right on target.
So your deck that you start with would have four of each of those things, four different, like unique, right?
Okay.
And then also in your deck, you would have gas cards, which would allow you to move around the board, bullet cards, which would allow you to defend yourself, and then some favor cards that would allow you to get favors from people. And then in addition to that, you'd also have some money cards. And money cards would allow you to, like cash, right? Cash would allow you to buy more cards, which is basically like in Dominion style, you'd be able to draw more cards on your turn.
Okay.
Alternatively, cash cards would let you pay to get rid of stuff.
Okay.
So that'd be kind of your options. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Cool. So the goal of the game is to go around the town, look at the cards, because there would be a deck of cards that would be all the suspects, all the locations, all blah, 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 all that, right? And you'd shuffle them and take one of each and put them face down in preset locations around the board.
Hmm.
So you're now driving around the board trying to get clues. So when I get to this location, I have to do some things and then I can look at the card. Nobody else gets to see it, just me.
Hmm.
And so now when I see Vinny Noni's in there, I know that that Vinny Noni's is my suspect, right?
Okay.
So that means that I need to get rid of him. Right, I need to keep him in my deck, and I need to get rid of the other ones. To complicate that, every card has an ability. So Vinny Noni's, Frankie the Fish, whatever, right? All of those suspects have different abilities. So when it comes up in my hand, I can use it to perform an action.
Okay.
But once I get rid of him, that ability is gone, right?
Yeah.
So a good instance would be the location cards. There'd be four location cards in your hand. Now, at those specific locations around the board, Those would be like keys. If you have this location card, you're going to go in and you're not going to get shot at, right?
Okay.
But I want to get down to the one location that I know it is. But if I go to that location, right? Now, I know what location the crime was committed in, but I still need to go to the other locations on the board, and I don't want to get shot at. Mm-hmm. I have to keep those in my deck.
Okay.
So the way you win is, on one hand, at the end of the game, you have the five cards you need in your hand. You can have more, but you have to have those specific five cards in your hand.
Okay.
Now, that sounds really tough to do. But as you're culling your deck and getting fewer and fewer cards and keeping, say, your cash cards so that you're constantly drawing more cards,
right,
it becomes very doable. When you have a 10-card deck and you end up being able to draw 8 cards, statistically speaking, it's looking pretty good. In addition to that, it has a mechanic called a card up your sleeve. And what that means is on any turn, you can save a card, one card.
Okay.
You can save it as long as you want. You can save the same card forever if you wanted. But every turn, you have the ability to use that card if you want and then throw it back in your deck.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
And then, or swap it out with another one. Mean that way, you always have an advantage. So, because my concern was, what if I have gas this turn so I can drive around, but I don't need to yet? Or I have bullets, but I can't. Yeah. So this way, and whiskey's another card. No, scotch. I think it was scotch. Scotch or whiskey, I don't remember. Whatever's more noir-like.
Scotch, I
think. That's what I was thinking, scotch. Yeah. I think that's what I had written down. Whiskey would be more cowboys. So, scotch gives you hit points back. So, like, you track your hit points on the board, so when you go to a place and you get shot, you're going to take damage, and then scotch lets you get that back.
Is there player elimination? Can you die?
No. But there would be some sort of penalty. Like, if you get down to zero, there'd be some sort of penalty that would require you to, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do something.
I'm not sure. It would be bad, though.
Yeah.
Like, you would not want to get down to...
Okay. All right. So... Okay, so there are these, you need the set of the 5 cards, and it's the same for everybody has all the same cards.
Yes, everyone starts the exact same 48 card deck.
Okay, and there are on the table face down on the game board face down. There's a henchman, a dame, a location,
a crime,
and a victim. Okay, and those are and anybody who can go along to whatever location on that board that card is can look at it secretly and put it back down.
Right.
And now you want to get your deck down to just those specific 5 cards.
You want to have a turn where you have those 5 cards in your hand.
In your hand.
And then you declare that you've solved the crime.
Right.
And when that happens, you now win.
Okay.
Right. So here's a reverse way that we could step into it. What if maybe this is too clue-like, I don't know. What if you dealt off to the side the 5 cards that solve the crime, right? And instead, on those buildings are the other three for each type. So when I go there, I take that card and I keep it. And then you have cards in your deck that allow you to look at other players' cards. Maybe that's what the favor card does. If I play a favor card, you have to show me one of your cards.
That changes the focus of the game a lot. I'm not saying that's bad.
Right. So
that complicates things up quite a bit, though. Because then it's not just about deck calling. It's about deduction.
Well, it's about deduction anyways. Because, for instance... If I'm watching your deck as you're playing, and I see that you've taken out Vinny Nonies, I would assume that Vinny Nonies was not the suspect.
See,
so there is still deduction built into it.
Okay.
This would just amp it up. What that could basically be is there would be 2 ways to get information from someone. Call a favor in, or fight them. Like, go to war. Like, you know what I mean? And if you go to war, that's where bullets come in.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, no, I that's got some interesting ideas.
So the primary mechanic would be deck culling and going around the board.
Right.
I guess I kind of like the idea where there's the extras are laying on the tape board, only because that feels very like a noir film to me. Like, I found the clue.
Mm-hmm.
That evidence is gone now because I got it. So now you don't have that evidence. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it would be too hard if it was like there was only 1 card in each one and I could keep it, because now everybody's just going to come take it from me.
Hmm.
You know?
But I kind of like the simplicity of just look at the 1 card. I kind of like that.
Does that simplicity match the deck culling aspect? Maybe it does.
Because you look at the card that you know is the suspect,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean you can prove it yet. You still have to do the work of pulling all the other stuff out of your deck to get rid of all the other evidence to essentially prove that.
So in that way, it's like a Phantom of the Opera, right? Where like I could know who you are, but I gotta prove it.
Gotta prove who you are. Yeah.
I also have a card in the deck called Johnny Law, and those cards. I was struggling with those cards. I was thinking it might be cool if the Johnny Law card came up for you with a certain other card, you get a penalty like that turn, right? So like you want to try and manage it so that that doesn't happen that often. But if it doesn't, then you can play it on another player to penalize them in some way, you know, because the idea is, right, I mean, you're Private Eyes, but in those movies, the Private Eyes are never on the level with the cops.
Right, yeah. They're always at odds. You know, one thing, to take a key from Nightfall, rather than tracking hit points, you could take bullet or take wound cards and add them into your deck. Because you're trying to pare down your deck and get it smaller and smaller and smaller. But if every time you get shot, you have to put another bullet hit into your deck, that can make it tougher for you. And then you can have a location on the board that's the hospital, where you go to the hospital and you can immediately heal any wounds that you have in your hand, which means you just get rid of those out of your hand immediately and throw them away. You know, but then depending on the hospital, but you might not go to the hospital if you only got one wound in your hand, knowing that you've got six more in the deck. You want to wait until you got two or three or four in your hand before you run over to the hospital, so you can be more efficient with that.
Oh, and what if, what about this? What if when you get the wound cards, instead of putting them in your deck, when you shoot me and I have a wound card, it goes in my hand.
Oh, and stays in your hand.
So I only draw four cards now.
Okay.
I only draw three cards.
Right.
And down and down and down.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. That's not bad. And then they're stuck in your hand. Right. And you can't do anything else until you go to the hospital and get healed.
And then there's a set amount. There's a four-player game. You know you'll never have more than 20.
Yeah.
Man. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's really good, man. I like that. I wouldn't want to call them wound cards, though. I want to think of like a nice...
Gunshots. Or a thematic name for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bullet hole.
I'll look something up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a fun penalty then, you know, because then you could actually like, as you pass players, you know, you could shoot at them and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Try and damage them.
Yeah. Drive-by shootings. Yeah.
And if I'm going into if I'm going to go into a place and I don't have the location card in my hand, I know I'm going to take gunfire when I go in.
Yeah.
And I can use a bullet to try and negate that.
Right.
So bullet cards would be cool to have in your hand too. Cause if you try and drive by me and shoot me and I have a bullet card, I can retaliate.
Right. Yeah, I think that's good.
Oh, or if I had like a Johnny Law card, even better. Oh, you're going fast, you go to shoot me, and I'm like, oh, bam.
Right. So then Johnny Law is kind of the counter, the automatic counter.
Yep.
Yeah. So that person then has to discard their entire hand or something.
Yeah, or something bad. Yeah.
Yeah, something bad. Yeah. Right on. Yeah, it's still a great name. Inhale Bullets.
I do. I really love the name so much.
Super good.
The name makes me happy.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
So yeah. So I don't know. I really want to make a prototype for it, but it still feels just so amorphous in my head. I think because I have to make a board, and that frankly just kind of terrifies me because there's so many considerations when you're making a board. How many spaces?
Right.
Yeah. I suppose I could make it area based movement instead of grid based movement to make it simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure. Different neighborhoods in the city or something.
Right. So that when I pay gas to move to a new neighborhood instead of to a new, five squares, that would make movement a lot simpler.
Yeah.
And have neighborhoods be connected. So like gas lets you move three. So for every gas I have, I can move through two neighborhoods. So I'd need four gas to move from one side of the board to the other, for instance.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Why not?
There could be like shady shortcuts and stuff that you take penalties when you go through.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So now I feel like I can design the game. All right. Sweet.
Good. All right. We cracked it.
We had a breakthrough.
Yeah. You want to move on to some,
Yeah, we got a lot of questions again tonight.
Yeah.
We got a bunch last week, board game links, I believe it was, piled us up with some questions, last week. They just said, hey, for your next show, here's a bunch of questions. So, which I appreciate because, yeah. So, okay. So we got a, got one here from Bo Severson. Thank you, Bo, for telling us how to pronounce your name. We always appreciate that because, like, you know, right. Because we always do that wrong. Mostly, I always do that wrong. All right. First of all, hey, you bought a copy of Watermelon Washout. Thank you.
Good dude.
I appreciate that.
Yep.
You tracked me down to buy a copy of Watermelon Washout.
That's awesome.
For that, you're awesome. All right. You said two things here. Seriously, though, how do you manage full-time jobs, families, and trying to make games? And then also, trying to do that all is hard. Do you have any tips for the audience besides making a podcast about it? Well, actually, I would tell you that if you want to have more time to design games, don't make a podcast about it.
Bad choice.
Because that's something we devote a lot of time to. And that's cool. We like that. That for us works for us. But for, you know, if you're limited on time, I would strongly suggest not making a podcast and focusing on designing. I think you just need to, in my opinion, because I have a kid. Rob doesn't. I'll soon have two kids at home. And I just find that I really have to set aside some time. You also want to make sure to set aside a place. And not like, I used to think that I needed a place away from the kid to do it. But then he wanted to come in to the office when I was designing.
Yeah.
And the office was not conducive for him to be in there. So it was a huge problem and I wouldn't get any work done. So I moved it to the basement because we're having another kid and we ran out of room. So I had to. But it turned out to be the greatest thing ever because now he has a bunch of toys down there. So I can design and play with him and hang out all at once. And he's happy and I'm happy. And I get more done this way. Like I've been a lot more, I mean, Rob has even said, I mean, I've made a ton of prototypes lately. And it's because I can hang out with my son and make prototypes, and he's happy about it because he's playing with his toys and stuff while we're in the basement. So, so that is a really good suggestion, I think. What about you? What do you got?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, like you said, I don't have any kids. But you know, I mean, how many hours a week do you spend just sitting on the couch staring at the TV? You know, and how hard would it be to switch one or two of those hours a week to, you know, doodling or sketching or writing up stuff or typing on your computer, you know, is it really that difficult to find a couple hours a week? I mean, I just kind of make the decision that, or a long time ago when I started doing this, I just kind of made the decision. This is something that I'm really interested in and I want to make it happen. And I want to give it a real shot. So just whenever I can, you know, get home from work and I have dinner with my wife and maybe we watch a little TV or something. Then I come up to my office. I do appreciate having a specific space that I can work in. I agree with you on that. But I don't really think if you think through your day and your leisure time, I don't think it's that hard to find a couple hours here or there to work on it. I think you'd be surprised how you can fit it in. I don't think it's that tough. Of course, I say this not having any kids.
But I do think you're right. I think that all of us can think of all the time we waste watching TV or something. And actually, I have it set up so that I can actually watch TV while working on design stuff, especially prototyping, since prototyping is mega boring.
Yeah.
When you're just like, I'm cutting out cards.
I do the same thing. I got two monitors on my computer here. So if I'm working on a prototype or art for something, I'll do that on one screen. I'll put on Netflix or a YouTube video on the other screen. And it's a piece of cake. Nothing to it. Yeah. So,
okay, so we've got, so here's the questions from Board Game Links we have that I mentioned earlier. First one, question for your next podcast. Do you balance your games with spreadsheets or math formulas? If so, how do you do it?
No. I use spreadsheets all the time, but just to help me keep organized because I like columns and pretty colors. And that helps me keep my brain organized. If I ever use a spreadsheet, a formula in a spreadsheet, it's an auto sum formula to make sure I keep track of how many cards I have in the game. I never do any statistical modeling of any kind. I'm really bad at that. I don't even care. I don't even want to try.
That's where Rob and I are different.
Yeah,
I used to just use spreadsheets for that, but I do a lot of stats and percentages. I honestly just do mostly percentages because I want to know what your percentages to draw a certain card. And I mainly do that because it's really bit me a few times when I haven't done that. Rob is just better. He just has better intuition than me. So
I generally don't make games with as many cards as you do.
It's true. So, so, you know, for me, and just Rob and I come at games in a different way. Like the way I design, like, it's very important to me that the percentages look right on paper. It's just because it's just who I am. I mean, that's how I've always been, you know, with the type of games I've always played. So, and just to be clear, the percentages on paper can look good and they can be completely wrong. And that's happened to me more than, you know, more than once. And I've heard other designers give up doing that kind of balancing because of that. But I stick to it because I feel like I'm getting better at knowing the percentages for, like, this is what I need percentage wise for this, this, and this to get my draws theoretically, statistically, where they should be.
Sure.
But, you know, truth is always better than that when you actually play it.
Yeah.
Do you prefer to prototype games with computer or pen and paper?
I always and pretty much only use a computer.
Yep, me too. Yeah. You used to do handwriting stuff, but a little bit. I hate it. I never do that.
Yeah, it just I can go so much faster with a computer.
And if I was just doing it for myself, I know Chevy Dodd, our friend, he does a lot of solo play tests with his first iterations of games, and he, I think he does those by hand. That's different, but if I did it by hand, nobody would be able to read it. Yeah. Heck, half the time I can't read it. Next one. Which game created by another designer completely fits your design style? That's a great question.
That's a good question.
I mean, I would say pretty much most of the Spiel des Jahres, you know, match with mine.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Well, I would rather answer that in terms of what other games do I wish that I could achieve the same level of quality and style. Like I love Carcassonne. I've said 1,000 times. I love how simple it is and how well it plays. You know, I love the Lost Cities card game. I love just how brain dead simple that is, but how brilliant it works together. Those are the kinds of things that I would aspire to be a part of or to emulate.
It's interesting. I think I can say two games. One is a game that, I think is like my design style. And then there's a game that I wish was like my design style. And the one I think is like my design style, and you'll probably agree with this, is Smash Up. Yeah. Smash Up is like, sounds like a game I would design.
Yeah, it does.
It's 99% variable player powers.
Yeah.
It's got some different kinds of features like that in it. That's very much my style. And I really enjoy that game. It's not your game. I know you're not it's not that you don't like the game. It's just not your style.
It's not my style. Right. Right.
But that's a game where I felt like, This is right up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that I could do simplicity. I mean, like, I wish that I could just throw out a game like Mexican Train Dominoes. I know that sounds so silly because it's such like an old school normal game, sure, but like, man, like, I wish I could strive for that kind of simplicity that still has meaningful, deep decisions. I got a couple more here. Did you ever disassemble a modern published board game to take its components and use it to build prototypes? Rob did with Carcassonne when he stole the meeples.
Yeah.
For Maelstrom.
Yeah.
Right?
I did, but Christine wouldn't let me send them out, so I had to put them back.
I remember that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I have not, actually, I don't think.
Yeah.
I've bought some junky board games and taken components out of them, but I'm too anal to take components out of my actual board games. I'd be afraid to lose them.
Yeah, I also, when playtesting Epic Kaiju Tea Party, I took the fabric dice bags out of my copy of Quarriors.
Right.
And it's driving me crazy that I haven't put those bags back in there yet. I'm looking at them right now. In that bucket over there, and I'm like, oh gosh, I just gotta get them back in there before I lose them. Not that I play Quarriors all the time, but just in case.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to be ready.
Mm-hmm. So that's all we've got for questions tonight. Thanks everybody who wrote in and tweeted at us. We really appreciate that. And I think that's going to be it for the show. So thanks everybody for listening. Don't forget, today is basically your last chance. So by the end of the day today, Monday the 31st, you can still get your entry in for our holiday game design challenge with Well, okay, so I'm totally stumbling over my words again. So pitch a game to us. Email us a game pitch about a game based on an obscure holiday. Jason and myself and Scott King will read all the entries. We'll pick our two favorites. The number one top winner will get a free photo shoot, thanks to Scott King, of his game or any other game that he chooses. Second place gets a bucket of 1,000 cubes, courtesy of Scott. So get your entries in by the end of the day today, okay? Yep. Or you're going to miss out.
And if today is the day other than March 31st, then you've already missed.
Too late.
We'll have other contests. You can enter those.
Yeah. and we'll be announcing the winner of that sometime in April. We just need some time to look it over. So,
yep.
And if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland. And I'm at poorly_design. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you want your own copy of the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, check it out on the Game Crafter. You can also pick up Water Balloon Washout. Just get in touch with Jason, either by email or on Twitter, and he'll hook up with you. Hopefully we'll have that storefront up soon.
Yep, very soon. But until then, if you want a copy, just shoot me a message on Twitter or email, and I'll get it taken care of for you.
And that's all we got. So thanks everybody for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. You ready?
Yeah.
This time I brought the calendar up on my phone so I don't crash the computer when I try and look at the calendar.
Good plan.
That was good thinking.
You're a smart guy.